pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins as always. Before we get started today, brand new show just made its debut on the Sports Podcast Network. The Women's Soccer Review, hosted by Dwayne Rollins and Jonathan Tanwald, is available now. First episode available on this feed here also, and on most of our soccer feeds, so you can discover it. It will have its own feed in the very near future. But good job to Jonathan and to Dwayne on the release of the Women's Soccer Review, which is live now.
Yeah, it's been something I've been looking to do for quite a few years now, actually, and it wasn't until our timing changed that it was really realistic. I mean, when you're producing 20 podcasts a month, it's, you know, hard to squeeze a couple more in. But nonetheless, we can now. Jonathan is the perfect expert. I think it allows us to provide a very unique Canadian-American view, which is something I don't think exists out there in any of the podcasts. We aim to have a worldview with it, and Jonathan's contacts. I have contacts too, but Jonathan's contacts in particular should allow us, once we establish this show, to provide you with some pretty big guests on that show. And that's the goal of it, to be a women's soccer podcaster record every 2 weeks for now. We'll see if the traffic warrants increasing that, but every 2 weeks for now, I think, is a good start, and it will supplement the women's coverage that we already provide on this show, on the main show.
Yes, exactly. And if you want to hear more about soccer and Canadian soccer, especially right now, there's a special offer on our Patreon page. If you get the SPN Extra tier, where Dora and I and myself and other collaborators also, you have Five Rings Extra, you have Soccer Today Presents, you have also All Elite Review Special Edition. There's a bunch of special content that you can get for the SPN Extra tier, and breaking news audio, which is one of the most exciting features that we can do now. That really gets me going, is as soon as something is big enough and warrants us to talk about it, we open up the channels and we can do so on our breaking news audio. The Two Solitudes tier for $2, of course, that will never change. And yesterday's show, we have Canadian Premier League's very own Tristan Borges on the show for 15 minutes, talking about his journey, his first year in the Canadian Premier League. How is it to win a championship? How is it to win individual award? So yes, you can listen to Tristan Borges on the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast, available right now on our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Once again, until Friday and Friday only, every $5 tier member gets access to the documentary tier for 6 months, where Dwayne and I, for the first episode, will dig deep into the 2000 Gold Cup. But that's enough said, enough plug. Dwayne, let's talk about soccer and soccer today. Big news coming out of Orlando an hour before the start of the show. Oscar Pereira, new manager of Orlando City Soccer Club, might be the best move they ever did since joining Major League Soccer in 2015.
Sure, on paper. And the caveat always with Orlando, and I hate to be the broken record or the bearer of bad news here, but really until you see the culture change, you can't really assume that it's going to happen. And I always come back and always compare Orlando to the early days of Toronto FC, because there's a lot of comparables. You had people that were running the club that really provided an unstable environment to operate in and didn't allow their skilled people that were there to flourish in any real way, and that resulted in kind of constant turnover. And this, on paper, does look like the opportunity for this club to finally get it right if they are willing to sort of back off and acknowledge their failings. You know, in TFC's case, it took an ownership change for that to happen. We'll see whether Orlando can learn a little bit quicker and a little bit differently than that. But on paper, as you said, this does seem like a good move for them. It's a guy that that has, you know, a good history, a good resume, and a guy that in that market should be able to find the type of players that will resonate to the community. Because Orlando, with Miami coming in, with Atlanta, which is their other team that they would call a rival, obviously surpassing them quite quickly in terms of on-field success, And Miami with the attention and the sexiness there. I mean, Orlando may be sunny, but it's not sexy unless you like Disney World, I guess.
Unless you like everything except the beach and I guess a good city. Because, yes, Orlando is it's different. It's not necessarily what you would call a big city, right? It's sprawled. It's not on the coast. And you do have most of the city owned by Disney, but no, of course it isn't. I was going to say interesting. I'm trying to stop interesting. It's my pet peeve and I do it every 2 minutes, but yes, it is interesting.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't want to bash Orlando. If you live there and you love it, then that's good for you. I mean, you know, there's people that probably can't imagine why anyone would want to live in Toronto, but I couldn't imagine living many other places, so to each their own. But yes, what I'm saying is that Miami, from an outside perspective, and even Tampa, from an outside perspective, which of course doesn't have a team, are much sexier than what we would find in Orlando. But yeah, a lot of things to overcome there. It's funny how quickly life comes at you, because when you look at what Orlando was heading in to Major League Soccer, what they were before they when they were in USL, they were a dominant program there. And then immediately when they came in to MLS, I think that they believed their hype at the lower levels a little too much. And I think we see a little bit of Cincinnati doing the same thing, that, oh, we're fine with all these players coming forward, when really they just didn't recognize the jump up. Even Mark DeSantos is an example. I don't think that necessarily and fully understood the jump up, and he seems to be learning quicker than these guys, but we'll see on that front. It's an issue. And when you are a market like Orlando, which has challenges, it's mid-size at best. We've already talked about sort of the perception issue there. You're going to need to be smart. That's how you can overcome it. You know, there's a Columbus. It's Columbus of the South in a lot of ways. There's places that people are going to look to first. So if you're going to be successful there, then you're going to have to find ways to be smarter than your opposition. And there's been times when Columbus has, and there's times when Columbus hasn't. There's never been a time where Orlando's been smarter. They've, in fact, been quite not smarter than the rest.
Yes, to say it quite lightly. Included in this transaction, apparently, is $200,000 going to FC Dallas. There was a clause, I imagine, when Tijuana signed Oscar Perea, coming from Dallas, to make this deal happen. I imagine there was a clause that if he comes back to Major League Soccer, FC Dallas has first dibs. And if not, there's going to be an exchange of money. We don't know, though, if it's $200,000 of allocation, $200,000 cash. That has not been made public. But this is from the great work, of course, of Stamps Takeout that you hopefully follow on social media. Always great news when it comes to Major League Soccer. Writes for The Athletic. We had him on the show a few times. But yeah, $200,000 going to Dallas. So the Orlando actually spent more money on a coach than they usually do on players.
Well, yeah. Look, he's had success in Major League Soccer before, and that's the bottom line. And if you're looking at it from an Orlando fan perspective, that's what's got to give you hope. This is not a guy that just has the name that you're not sure of. I think that we're getting a bit past the time when we just assume that names from outside of Major League Soccer can't be successful. And maybe we should never have assumed that, but there was a time when that was the perception, to the point where, you know, it still is better to have guys coming in that have proven that they can operate within the restrictions. And in a market, too, he was successful in a similar market. As I said, Dallas is, it's a big city, but within Major League Soccer's context, it's not a big player, right? So he's had success there, and I think he could have success in Orlando, but show me, don't tell me.
Yeah, we were told before, and we haven't seen it happen. So now we'll see. And that's the thing, is Orlando has one of the nicest stadiums in the league and could have a big, I would say, big influence in this league. It's all about how you put your front office together. And so far, it hasn't been put together. So we'll see where this brings Orlando for the future. Also, yesterday, it was confirmed RSL's Freddy Juarez has his interim tag taken away. He is now the official manager of Real Salt Lake heading into 2020. And they're going for inside promotions as well for the general manager and most of the front office's available jobs. They're going to trust people that were there and understand the culture of the club. They wanted to bring someone else who actually has a big knowledge of the culture of the club because he created it to begin with. But apparently he was asking for too much money.
Yeah, Jason Christ we're talking about here, who obviously has been at work for a while now and hasn't really been successful in the MLS 3.0 era, but they were looking to bring him back. They gave him an offer. Christ countered that offer at the point, this is being reported, that was, quote unquote, so insulting that RSL just pulled it. I think they probably thought that they could get, you know, who knows what the truth is here, but they probably thought that they could get a bit of a so-called hometown discount here. But obviously, Christ decided that he didn't want to go back, and who knows what the feelings were when he left in the first place to maybe lend himself to feeling that way. Now, there's also... you know, in this era, this current month, when we're finding lots of things out about coaches in a different sport, there's been some suggestion that maybe Jason Christ isn't in touch with diplomacy when it comes to dealing with media and even players. He might not be the nicest coach, is what we're saying.
You're
here.
Saying he might not be the most tactful coach out there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some suggestions of that, so that maybe, you know, I've seen people in RSL Twitter circles anyway suggesting that they may have dodged a bullet with this. So so that, take that for what it is. I mean, there's no one reporting anything as significant as what we're seeing in the hockey world, which is what I just alluded to a minute ago. But, you know, we're having coaches drop off by the day there for – and thank God. It's delightful to watch from an outside perspective.
It's about time, but don't get it wrong. It probably is the same in the soccer world. And the thing is, soccer world might be a bit more advanced because we are seeing the change. We talked about this last week. The era of the super manager is over. And I think part of that super manager was the fact that he was an untouchable and he could do no wrong, even when it was kicking players or yelling at players or spitting on players. We've heard crazy allegations over the years in many, many different spots. But I think it does apply to soccer here when you see managers from across the spectrum of sports. And that's not just... we're not just talking about hockey here. It's happening in the NFL. It's happening in other college football. For years, it's been happening now. So, no, I do agree that maybe RSL dodged a bullet. We don't know. It's just speculations at this point. But if you have any hearing or any rumbling of a rumor, yeah, maybe you can just look somewhere else and find someone that has a blank slate, at least a blank pass when it comes to allegations to not the best relationship with players or similar to this, or abuse or verbal abuse, or even further as it has been going on in the hockey world where sometimes it's physical abuse.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, to go back to soccer on this, there used to be a term, a hair dryer, right? Alex Ferguson did the hair dryer on them, meaning he was so close to you could feel his breath blowing out. You tell me a work environment where if your boss like screamed at you to the point that your hair was moving because he was so close and screaming so loud, where that would fly. And the sports world kind of was, you know, in the 60s, maybe, yes, your boss might do that to you. But you go to HR nowadays if that happens. And yeah, the sports world is starting to catch up. And coaches, if they want to be successful in this year, are going to need to adjust. So, again, we don't have anything specific on Christ, but there are people that are suggesting that his personal relationships could do with some tweaking if he's to be successful moving forward.
And if you look at just the pure reality that we haven't seen him in the top club over the last few years, at least on the club side, he's been involved in the development side on the U.S. men's national team side, but not necessarily involved in a club day-to-day operation over the last few years. Maybe there's correlations there, or maybe there's not. It's all pure speculation, but it is a fact that Freddy Juarez is now manager of Real Salt Lake. Speaking of Alex Ferguson, the hairdryer, let's talk about the English Premier League, Dwayne, for a second. Crazy time has come. December is upon us, and that means games every couple days in the English Premier League.
Yeah, I actually forgot that there were games yesterday because City played yesterday, and I actually forgot about it because there's so much going on so quickly, and the Manchester Derby is on Saturday, so that will be your Saturday or Sunday this weekend anyway. I tend to block it out until I have to deal with it. It's a lot. It's fast and furious, and we talked about it in regards to the title race, and I think that even more than other years, how Liverpool navigates this month is going to determine whether it's a canter to the finish or whether it's a sprint to the finish. They got the World Club Cup shoved in there as well into an already insane schedule. How they can handle that is going to be a massive thing. And it all starts today at 3:30 when the Derby goes off. And Everton's not exactly flying high, and Everton has a lot of difficult in that fixture. They haven't won in many years now. And if we remember last year's where they had the result quite late, and a result quite late, and then the goalkeeping error in stoppage time gave
Casper
Liverpool the win. Yeah, so this is a bogey. Well, it's not a bogey team so much. It's a terrifying monster in the closet team for Everton, and you know their fans are sick of losing this, and they're sick of losing in general, and they're having a tough year. We haven't really mentioned Everton much this year because they're
struggling.
Yeah.
Because Marco Silva, I guess, is not the savior that Everton thought he was. And it's been a couple of times now that we say this about Marco Silva. But no, it's true. And there's great games. You mentioned Liverpool-Everton today, 3:15 p.m. Eastern Time. There's also Chelsea-Villa, Leicester-Watford, which is a good one. Wolves-West Ham, and also Man United-Tottenham. Jose, the special one, going back to Old Trafford to face his former team. I guess it's unfair now because he's coached so many teams over the last 2 decades that there's a lot of former teams of Jose Mourinho out there. But Tottenham, Man United at Old Trafford, 2:30 p.m. today.
Yeah, and so that's going to get a lot of people paying attention. I look, it's a good day of fixtures if you're at work and you have the DAZN app on your phone or the ESPN Plus app on your phone in the States, you might want to, subtly put it on your lap and pretend to work for a while this afternoon. I'm not suggesting you don't do your work, but you can find a way.
If you don't
spend the afternoon.
If you don't do your work, you have a lot of soccer to watch today. So that's another great
and,
positive.
And if you don't do your work enough times, maybe you have all the soccer in the world to watch after. You just won't be able to afford the apps anymore. So you do you guys.
It's true. Speaking of apps and online streaming, one day we'll talk about the reaction that Monday created in England. Monday was the first time an English Premier League game was only available in England through a streaming service, through Amazon. And that did not go well. People were not happy. Fans were saying, you're keeping us from watching. Anyways, that's an interesting reaction. Maybe a deep dive for a Soccer Today Presents down the road. But it is interesting. Yeah, again, I said interesting. I should have a counter on the screen here. And every time I say interesting, it goes up. So by the time the show finishes, I know that I said it 2,000 times. But that's about what I have for the schedule in the Premier League. But it's an amazing time when you love soccer. Every couple of days, you got to watch some England Premier League. And it starts today, tomorrow, this weekend, next week, and next weekend.
Yeah, when I was in journalism school, the professor of the broadcast class used to have ping pong balls, and every time you would say or they would throw the ping pong ball over your head, which probably again wouldn't fly nowadays.
No, it's called assault.
They laughed when they did it, but yeah, there was still a ball flying above your head.
Can you imagine, like, the rector of university walking down the hall right next to the broadcasting class, and you just hear like Mr. Smith throwing ping pong balls at student, and that would not go 2019, which again is great. Evolution is part of our daily lives, and it is also on how we live our daily lives. Speaking of how we live our daily lives, in Charlotte, it might be different down the road. It was rumored to be announced Monday. It was a false rumor, but now the same rumors are rumbling again. And maybe Friday will be the day that Charlotte will join, officially, Major League Soccer, making the total of teams to 30 and making it even for 2021 and 2022, probably. I wouldn't be surprised if Charlotte actually is announced Friday for 2021 to make it a double expansion year. It's always better when you have two clubs coming in at the same time and you don't have odd number of team in a conference. But this seems to be the case now. Charlotte to Major League Soccer.
Yeah, this one surprised me. They were part of the initial, back when they decided they were going to stop at, was it 24 they were stopping at?
That was January 2017, and it was 24, yes.
Yeah, so they were part of that application, and were generally conceived as one of the, you know, I think we had a show back then, because we were doing shows back then, where obviously 2017, we were well doing shows back then, but anyway, where we ranked them, and we sort of put them in like, possibility tiers, and I think we had Charlotte in the bottom tier, so it does surprise me a little bit. And look, it's a market that has a lot of soccer history, particularly in the college side. Well, mostly in the college side. There's some, you know, successful, obviously, on the you look at the sort of the women's NWSL champion coming out of North Carolina down there in that area as well. So it's not without soccer history. It obviously has sports history, again, particularly on the college side, although, you know, you do have other teams that are down there as well that, the Bobcats. Are Bobcats still? I don't know. Relevant the NBA team is.
It is Charlotte Bobcats. They are in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it is not a relevant team in the NBA for sure. And you mentioned the soccer history. The soccer history, though, recently, at least in the last two decades, if you go back to the NASL and the USL recently, and the NWSL on the women's side, it was in Raleigh-Durham, though. That's where the Courage is, and that's where North Carolina SC is in USL. So you did have that aspect, and we thought, and of course, Steve Malik is the owner of the NWSL team and also the USL team. We thought it was going to be that ownership group. At least I thought that ownership group had a better chance of making it to Major League Soccer than Charlotte, because Charlotte, the lack of experience in the soccer world, the lack of a proven soccer fan base in Charlotte, I believe, was giving me the idea that maybe Raleigh and Durham, and I remember ranking Raleigh Durham because they were part of that January 2017 expansion process too. There was 12 entities, 12 markets. Tampa was in there. St. Louis was in there. Sacramento was in there. Nashville was in there. Pretty much all the clubs that you've seen except Miami were part of that process. And Austin wasn't part of that process, by the way, too. So kind of weird that these two have a club and some of the markets in that process wasn't. But I thought Raleigh and Durham had more chance. But I guess the ownership group made the difference. And if it's true, if Charlotte becomes a 30th team in Major League Soccer on Friday, I guess, again, it's all about the ownership, stupid.
Well, no, it is, because I think if it wasn't about the ownership, comma, stupid, it would be, there'd be a team in Phoenix, for instance, because Phoenix is a massive market that fits a very necessary need for the league. But if the ownership's there and the stadium's there, then and they have the money's there to pay the fee, which is a big part of what's happening here, then they're coming in. Critics of the league will say that they'll call it a pyramid scheme. Some of them, well, that's a little extreme, but there is an element of the expansion fees floating the success of the league that they're going to have to figure out, because you would think that they're at 30 now. If they do announce Charlotte, two more will fit a conventional North American model. Now, I'm on record as saying I could see them going 40 or 48 and divided into two leagues. I could see that as maybe being a long-term vision of the team. It just makes sense. If you're going to get this divided, you might as well, you know, start getting real geographical and have MLS East and MLS West or South or North or whatever you decide to call it. And that would work. But, you know, you are going to run out of markets eventually. So you do have to find a way to get the finances flowing. But I think the argument, that the counter argument to that would be, the more markets you have, the more relevant the league is nationwide, and sort of, well, by nationwide, we'll say, which creates more revenue, creates more sponsorships, creates more TV numbers, all that good stuff, which then generates some money. So it's self-perpetuating, right? So look, is the league too bloated? Probably. But has that boat sailed? Absolutely. So if you accepted those two concepts, then really it's just down to, where do you want to put teams? And I can't say as I argue against MLS's rationale from a purely business standpoint that you should go to the best markets business-wise. That's not sexy. That's not romantic.
No,
but a lot of our listeners might disagree, but it is what it is.
I'm gonna throw you to an old movie by today's standard. I think it came out in 2006, 2007, even maybe earlier, called The Corporation. It's a great movie. It's gonna open your eyes on a lot of things, and a movie that still holds up. But in this movie, they talk about branding becoming actually production. Branding in itself is producing something. And when you look at Major League Soccer and the profits that have been made with expansion team, it dwarfs every other aspect of the profit margin of this league. Nothing will give you more money than just giving someone a team or a territory for a team than creating an expansion team. When you talk about maybe $600 million when it comes to 31, 32, 33, 34 team. That was the rumors that were circulating on the numbers that were circulating in the last couple of days. So nothing makes more money for Major League Soccer than branding, which is creating a new identity of a team and a team. Nothing makes more money than an expansion team for Major League Soccer. So if you are an entrepreneur or if you know a little bit about business, you understand that, look, if you're going to give me a lot of money for one thing, and it happens more and more, I'm going to do that even more and more because, well, the bottom line profits off of it, and that's all there is to it. It's not like there's an ideology of, we're going to drown the soccer market. Maybe, but it's generated by the profit margin and the profit lines, and those are inflated with expansion team numbers. So, there you go.
Yeah. Not to get overly business here, but yes, the sports business model is not based on ticket sales or revenues even. I mean, it's part of it, but it's based on valuation and the ability to leverage your asset to, you know, use it to get liens for other things that you want to buy or eventually to sell it at the value that it goes up and raise. I mean, there was an article in the Toronto Sun about 3 weeks ago where they quite laid it out in quite blank terms when it came to TFC. Apparently, there's a story that came about that when MLSE was looking to buy TFC in 2006, 5-6, around there, they approached Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, to ask whether he thought that they should do it. And Bettman strongly advised against it, which maybe tells you a little something about the leadership at the NHL right now.
Out of touch, out of time.
Yeah. Anyway, they bought it for $10 million. And now in the Forbes rankings, to take them for what they're worth, TFC was valued at almost $300 million. So it's fair to say that MLSC made a good investment with its soccer team a decade or so ago.
Yep. Which, again, is probably explains a lot more why Charlotte is going to be potentially an MLS market before Raleigh-Durham. And look, there's not going to be two teams in North Carolina, South Carolina, or in the Carolinas. It's going to be Charlotte. It's going to be branded as the Carolinas team to make sure you include the two states. And it's going to be the owners of the Panthers of Carolina. Yeah, exactly. And it makes a lot of sense. That's where they're going to play probably for the first couple of years until the stadium is built. For some reason, Dwayne, I've seen this movie before. Usually it doesn't lead to a soccer-specific stadium.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes we'll see what happens.
I've seen the New York version of this movie. Okay, Minnesota did it right. Minnesota played in the University Stadium for 2 years and then got their own stadium. But if I look at NYCFC and look at even Chicago going back to a big stadium, but it's probably the most... go ahead.
Even the Sounders, I was going to say.
Well, yeah, the Sounders, but at least they filled that stadium, you know, so there's nothing we could say. It's not like they're playing in front of an empty stadium most games. Most games, there's 30,000 plus, so who are we to complain?
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, if they weren't selling the tickets, I think probably Seattle, they're successful enough that they probably would have their own stadium now, but, you know, it gets to the point that they go, oh, we might as well fill these. Like, it's a evolution back. The Triple S stadiums, soccer-specific stadiums, that's like MLSsoccer.soccer, Triple S stadiums. Anyway, they're no longer necessary. You just need a stadium, a viable stadium. That's all
true.
That really matters.
Because you having 5,000 fans in a 100,000 fan stadium, it's empty. But you grow your fan base all the way to your soccer-specific stadium of 20,000 fans, and you get that filled. And then when you go back to the big stadium for a couple games and you realize, oh, man, we actually drew 40, 50. And now it doesn't look like it's a stadium that is hindering our our product, it actually helps it because, oh man, we've got so much people, the shots, the camera, the production values, and yeah, exactly. So it's true. In the growth chart, you know, those growth chart that you see in business or in life when your kid is growing up or your puppy is growing up, at some point in that growth chart, it becomes a straight line. So there's not much you can do once it's grown. It's grown. Once your NFL-sized stadium is full, it's full. Like, you've done your job. But to get there, the soccer-specific stadium was a necessary path to some of these teams rekindling that passion and then growing the fan base even more.
Yeah, well, the problem now, of course, is that the turf is going back to field turf more and more.
That's true.
And that's you know, there was a time not too long ago where MLS only had two stadiums or something that played on field turf. Well, that's reversing now. They're getting more and more. And, you know, here's the thing. How's Atlanta ever moving out? They're not.
They're not.
They'd have, never. Like, they're selling 70,000 tickets for games. Like, they'd have to sell tickets at $100 a pop in a 30,000-seat stadium. Like,
which they would probably do, but still.
Yeah, I mean, look. Yeah, it's the block. Like, I look at TFC. It's what I know. So forgive me for making the comparisons again. But TFC started in a 20,000-seat stadium. There was scarcity, so they pushed it up and up and up again. Finally, they got to a point because they were only at a certain level. There was only a certain level of product available that they hit a ceiling. So now that stadium, which is 30,000, is a bit too big for them in terms of their ability to fill it consistently. So, you know, they'll get 23,000 people at a TFC game, but it's a third empty, and people will go, well, where are the people? Well, it's still a lot of people in there. It's just a third empty, right? Had they started at a stadium that was 50,000 and sold it out in those years, then who knows? Maybe they're filling that 30,000-seat stadium. So it's all about sort of scarcity and demand and perception and all that sort of stuff. But if you can't go from 70,000 seats down to 30,000 seats without really hammering your season ticket holders. Well, Cincinnati's going through that now too. We haven't talked about this, but when they move into their new stadium, they've basically moved all of their supporters from where they're used to being to a different part of the stadium, and they've completely blocked one side of the stadium off as being club seats. And their fans are not reacting well to that because they are used to a certain situation, and now they're being asked to, like, pay more money for less is what they'd see it. So it's complicated when you start in this way. So, yeah, don't expect expect more of these big stadiums coming forward because they're multi-use and the ownerships can get more dates out of it, and it all works out, and it's not
more tax benefits, more income, or the city tax benefits, municipal taxes benefits for the same property. No, of course. And this was Soccer Today's Business Course. It's brought to you by the Women's Soccer Review, brand new show by Dwayne Rollins and Jonathan Tannenwald, available right now on the Sports Podcast Network. But before we say goodbye for today, Dwayne, quickly, Juan Agudelo, one of the two players selected in the re-entry draft stage 2, and he was selected by Toronto FC, and also the Asad Abdul Salam was selected by FC Cincinnati. He played 18 games, 11 starts for the Seattle Sounders in 2019. Only two teams have selected players. So once again, Juan Agudelo for TFC and Asad Abdul Salam for FC Cincinnati.
Yeah, this is it's an interesting gamble from TFC. It's not even a gamble from TFC. They're claiming his rights, and the press release was interesting. Alec Curtis just outright said it, like, yeah, we're not committed to signing him, but we're going to talk to him. And he's a buddy of Josie's. Maybe, you know, it's good to have a guy like that can play as a peer backup to that. Patrick Mullins might be a little bit worried, but
I was just going to say, Wendy, it's good to have a friend of Josie who's going to take over for him when Josie gets injured.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think probably what's going to happen here is that he's going to look to see what his options are overall, and TFC is something that is of interest to him. And I suspect that what's happening with this re-entry draft is a lot of the teams were a little bit reluctant to grab these guys because they're not too sure what the mood is going to be with the CBA to have this kind of mechanism moving forward. So these players were probably reluctant to accept roles in this. Here's an example of a player that kind of wanted to go to Toronto, had expressed an interest because of his friendship with Josie. There is a fit there. TFC needs a backup striker for the very reasons. I mean, Patrick Mullins is a different role. I think there's still room for him, but he's kind of a late-game defensive striker, if you know what I mean, like a guy that can track
who's going to pressure, who's going to be able to be your first defender on the field, pretty much.
Yeah, so this is a good move here. I mean, we talked about TFC and the need to get a second striking option in when we talked about the Balotelli rumors a week or so ago. So obviously it's a little less sexy than that, but a similar kind of idea. But in general, the reentry draft is kind of let's hope that this is the last time that the term reentry draft is ever uttered on Soccer Today. Let's just say that.
Let's hope it's one of the casualties of the CBA. Gam, tam, reentry draft, waivers, and maybe even the super draft. Throw it all in there, make it a big ball, and kick it out of the stadium. That's what I would do.
Yes, well, apparently, I think we've mentioned this already, the super draft is no more. They're probably going to rename it, and just it's going to be like the college draft, and it's going to be on a conference call.
The super conference call. Welcome to Major League Soccer super conference call, where four teams out of 38 will pick players. This is going to be the future of the super draft, pretty much. But on that note, it's all for today, folks. But you can find more on our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportsbroadcastnetwork. The Two Sides to a Soccer podcast came out yesterday with Tristan Borges of Forge FC in the Canadian Premier League. The Canadian Premier League Player of the Year joined us yesterday to give us his impression on year one, give us his impression on his game, the team, the experiences and chemistry that Sigma had before. Great conversation with the Canadian Player of the Year in the Canadian Premier League. Also, Tristan Borges. And if you like our Patreon page, make sure you go and sign up for the $5 tier before Friday, because when you sign up for the $5 tier, you get the $10 tiers included for 6 months with great audio documentaries and more that you can find on our Patreon page. Once again, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. And when you join, you'll have an email. They'll give you an RSS link, and you can add that RSS link to any podcatchers, and you'll be able to get our premium podcast anywhere you get your podcast, but that's on our website only. And once you subscribe and gave your information, you'll receive an email with all the details. But until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and we wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.